Brother Austin.
There we go.
Ah,
my man, good brother Bruce. What's going on, good brother?
Hey, nothing, man. Glad we got that situated.
Yeah, man. Listen, yo, I wanted to tell you thank you. I appreciate you just spending some time with me. Thank you for coming to the podcast, Single, Obsolete, and Dangerous, a podcast where black folk get to talk about shit that's on their minds but don't know how to say when it comes to racism, white supremacy, and white people. You know, so thank you for just coming on and just spending some time creating some content for this space, you know?
No, definitely, definitely.
I always start out, I always ask, man, are you a non-white person or are you a white person?
I'm a non-white person.
Okay. And does the system of white supremacy, which is racism, is it in existence?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, cool. Now, since we got those basics down, what has been your experience in trying to survive in a system that is created to support, advance the betterment of white people, and you are not a white person yourself?
Well, one, I can say, like, it's being a large black man, it kind of puts you, you know, I think you're constantly in a state of, like, self-defense readiness, because, you know, it's like you're always deemed as a, to me, I always feel like I was deemed as a threat. Oh, you're too big, or, you know, you're too masculine, or you're too, you know, you're too black, and they see it as violence, you know, when they don't really, I feel like they can't, especially white people, they just have trouble seeing otherwise. So for me, it's been tough, but I feel like the struggle has helped me be a better person, a better man. And it's really helped me with my grind, because, like, as my father taught me, to make it in America, especially being a black male, you got to be 10 times better to be considered equal. So that's kind of been my motto my whole life. You know, I wasn't accepting the 95% because my eyes, I feel like I had to be the, so I wanted to be the best. So I'm not striving for that 95%. You know what I mean? Anything I do, I was trying to put my best foot forward, because I know that's what I had to do to be considered equal, not better, but just equal. You know, to try to be on that equal playing field. So,
and even in the midst of you being 100%, have you reached equality? Have you reached equal standing with your white counterparts in any facet of life that you are in?
I don't want to say equal. I'm not going to say equal standing. I mean, there's some things you're just going to be judged differently on based upon your color of your skin, and male or female, I think that's in general. So I'm not going to sit here and lie. I think from our ancestors or past generations, I think stuff has gotten a little bit more, has gotten better. I'll say that. I say it's gotten better, or maybe it's just, it's stuff is more subtle now, but I believe it's kind of reversing since President Trump has been in office. But yeah, I mean, speaking for myself, I'm not going to say it's been equal standing, but I believe a little bit of, you know, the federal stuff that's been kind of put into place, it's kind of helped me, I guess, in a way. I would say that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is that how we were, say, on the plantation.
Yes, sir.
Is better than how we are now.
I don't want to say better, because I can't fathom. I wasn't born at that time. I can't fathom being in that type of situation working on the plantation. I know we have mass incarceration, and with my career choice, I see how the system affects brown people and just also affects just poor people, you know? So I can only speak from what I know. So I don't want to say one is better. It's easier than the other. Each has his own struggle. I can't speak on that because I wasn't there. But
okay,
you know.
So I like that you're using that understanding that, you know what, I wasn't there, and so I'm not gonna act like I knew what it was like being back then. I know what I'm going through right now. right? So let's see if there's any parallels. When we were on the plantation and we learned to speak English, are you speaking the same English right now with me that we learned when we were on the plantation?
Yes.
Check one. The name that we were given when we were on the plantation, is that the name that you have right now? That last name that you and I are talking that you have right now?
It is.
Check two. The food and the way we eat food and the style of food that we eat, soul food, derived and developed while we're on the plantation. Do you eat soul food right now while you and I are speaking?
Yes.
Check number three. Do you want me to keep going?
No, I get your point, Brother Austin. I get your point.
So even though you were not on the plantation, the parts of the plantation are still ever present right in this day and time right now.
Yes, sir.
You know what's funny, when you ever talk to when you talk to a white person and you try to bring up or talk about the experiences that happened during slavery, they'll say, "Well, why are you worried about it? Like you're talking about something that you never even experienced. Like you didn't go through, like you weren't a slave. Show me somebody now who ever said that they were a slave on a plantation." And what happens is they don't understand the subtlety, like you said, the subtlety of the experiences that happened on the plantation are ever more present now as they were when we first got off the boat. There's a understanding, a real statistical understanding that the eve of the Civil War, right before the Civil War had happened, there was about 200,000 Black folk who were free, and there was about 2 million that were in bondage, right? So our demographic, the eve of the Civil War, there was about 200,000 that were about free, and then there was about 2 million in bondage. And even at up until that point, we were able to amass 0.5% of the wealth and ownership of the country. So even though the large majority of us were slaves, we were still able to at least amass 0.5% of the ownership and wealth that was in the country just before the Civil War happened. So after the Civil War, then after being the Emancipated Proclamation, then after Reconstruction, then after World War I, then after World War II, then after the Korean War, then after the Vietnam War, right? Then after the Industrial Revolution, then the dot-com blow up, Michael Jordan, Oprah, and Shaq, then Obama, right now, today. How much do you think we own and control as it relates to wealth and ownership in this country?
I'd probably say 5% or less.
It is 0.5% right now. We have not gained anything. Zero, zilch, nada, nothing.
Wow.
Pocket lint since we were on, once the majority of us were on the plantation, we are still at the ownership and control of 0.5% right now while you and I are talking. So again, there are things that are still ever prevalent and ever present that we experience on the plantation that are alive and well right now as we are speaking. Like right now, the out of the five Fortune 500 company, 20 of the top 50 were in operation while their plantation, while people were in slavery, and they benefited. Those companies and corporations are alive and well right now. One of them is Brooks Brothers. You know Brooks Brothers? Everyone talk about getting a Brooks Brothers suit.
Yeah.
Oh, you ever been to Brooks Brothers and get you some Brooks Brothers?
Yeah.
Do you understand that the Brooks Brothers actually manufactured and mass produced all the slave clothing that was used and created? That they actually created the slave clothes. And actually, the first time, and this was even deep, the seersucker suit, that pinstripe, that seersucker,
Yeah.
the original print of the seersucker was actually used for labor, so-called indentured servants and laborers that wind up becoming actual clothes that were used and wore by slaves. Even some of those aspects in those original drawings, if you check and see Kanye when he introduced some of his line, he went way back, was able to get his hands on some of those designs. And so now what you see is like kind of that trendy kind of sweatshirt with the holes in it and the ripped stuff and things of that nature. A lot of people are like, man, that looks like some slave clothes. And then people were referring to that. Well, he actually went and kind of took a lot of those designs and spent some time because he had spent some time in Paris with a lot of designers, and he was able to, he came across, oh wow, you know what I'm gonna do? This is how Kanye is. I'm gonna bring these designs back. I'm gonna make it trendy, and not only that, I'm gonna make white people want to wear it, cause you know what I mean. I just affect culture like that, and watch me drop this, and then now all of a sudden it's like in that grungy, dirty, and so people are like, oh, that's part of the punk rock grunge. I'm like,
Now
no,
you wearing slave clothes.
no. And guess what? You're gonna pay $2,000 for the
Yeah,
shirt.
you're paying Brad for some slave clothes. It's funny, man. This world crazy.
Yo, man, it's deep.
It's deep. It's deep.
Yo, can you please I appreciate that you had said something, talk about your profession. What is the profession that you're like that you're in that you reflected on what you say?
I'm currently in law enforcement. I'm a police officer.
Are you a police officer or are you an officer of the peace?
Officer of the peace.
Is there a difference between being a police officer and an officer of the peace of peace or a peace officer?
Yeah, I think so.
So you're an officer of the peace, but you're not a police officer.
Yeah, I'm officer of the peace.
What's the difference?
Officer of the peace is somebody. Well, I'll say it like this: as an officer of the peace or a police officer, whatever we want to call it, with our job comes a lot of responsibility. We have the leeway. Now, I would say we have the freedom to take life and take freedom away. In the, you know, that's like we that's more power than the president if you really think about it. And with that comes a lot of responsibility, and also along with the job, we have discretion with a lot of stuff. I mean, literally, somebody could be speeding. You can literally, I don't feel like dealing with that today. Or if you pull them over, whatever, you can simply give them a warning, or you can write them for the max fines, take points away, do whatever. Like, that's how much control we have over people. You know, that you could, that's how we're, it's a very powerful position. And when that's why I describe myself as a peace officer or officer of the peace, because, you know, I'm not here to write massive tickets and destroy people's lives and just throw people in jail. That's not why I joined the police force. You know, people could, you can call me corner all you want, but you know, I've argued a lot of my brothers and sisters because I'm like, you know, we see you have, you see this issue of just like police officers being extremely, not to be extremely, but using except to me, sometimes I've seen it just using unnecessary force on black women, black men, when you could put a white person in that same situation and, you know, they're way more lenient, way more patient, you know, less aggressive. And I was like, and that's okay. And that's not okay. But to me, I'm like, we expect somebody, you expect somebody who doesn't look like you to care about you, to care more about you than the people that do look like you. So I'm like, how to be a part of the solution is be join the police force. Like, you know, nothing is better than having somebody that is from your community, looks like you, understands your struggle, understands how you were brought up, you know, in there to help you know, in their policing your community. I thought it was going to be an issue. I have no problems in my hood. I police where I grew up at.
Man, Say that one more time.
I have
Say that one more time.
I have no problems when I people
in
know
my hood.
In my hood. I police where I grew up at. People know me. People respect me, and I have no problems.
You know what's so important? And again, I just appreciate you coming and just adding this content, because as it relates to police and our experience with the police, we have been saying, man, why don't you know, it's better to get somebody from the community to police the community. And it's been a lot of misnomer. No one has really ever been able to have a chance to listen and that to be actually happening. So you being from the hood and be like, listen, I police in the hood that I'm from and I have no issues and no problems. You know what I'm saying? Now, what I wanted to ask, what is your experience that you've had as it relates to there may be, because we're gonna jump with the white people. You know, this podcast, we talk about, but
don't worry.
We're gonna get to them. Let's just take care. We're gonna take care of home first.
Oh, you know.
And then we're gonna get to them. But let's take care of home first. You know? When non-white people, particularly black folks, what has been your experience being an officer of the peace, not a police officer, and trying to maintain and serve a certain level of justice, perceivably anyway, but how has that been?
I mean, honestly, it's being a police officer has been a wonderful experience. It's showed me a lot of the world. I'm only 24, so I've been doing it for 2 years, and I would say it grew me up quick, but you know, just people don't understand, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm on the fence because I can look and I can understand the officer side, but I can understand, you know, a civilian side as well when we have some of these issues where it might be, you know, excessive force and such. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, I break it down like one, I'm not gonna lie, I've definitely had some kickbacks though from the black community. Well, because, you know, of course, what are they gonna, you know, what, Brother Austin, what are they going to call me? You know, the traitor, the sellout, the coon, you know what I mean? Disrespected me to my face when they don't even know me, and that I can really tell them, like, yo, I did this for you, you know? I want to help us. This is why I'm here. I'm putting my life on the line for us. You know, I want to make sure that if a situation, because I'm not going to sit there and just let somebody get beat down. That's not in my nature. I can't sit there and accept that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, I'm doing this for us, but you know, I get that, you know. And then you get your people, and like what I've seen, and this is not just black, like this is not a black and white thing, but what I've seen just with people in general, like when they're in the wrong, they'll make any excuse. You know, it's hard for people to accept when they're in the wrong, and they want to blame you and say you're just harassing me, you're blaming, you're messing with me, and especially the black, especially a lot of black men, they'll look at me. I've gotten, as soon as I walk on the scene, because I'm one of the only black officers on my shift right now. One or two or three. And you know, they look at me, it's like, man, you supposed to be one of us. And I'm like, what did, so I'm supposed to be doing stuff. I'm supposed to be doing illegal stuff, you know, beating my girl. You know what I mean?
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
That's what we're supposed to be. You know what I mean?
Wow.
You know, I don't,
man, I just want to thank you for just being there in that setting. And just to, even since we're being, you know, transparent, like around the time, just to kind of add around the time, and I know you can attest to this, but for in my life, what happened was, you know, around the time that a lot of these officer situations were happening, these killings were happening, there was a big reverb that was happening in the higher ups of the echelons of the departments. And one of the things that they were screaming and talking about was, you know, it's something in the training. There's something in the training. Like, you know, they got to be trained different.
Mm-hmm.
So they did set out to try to change. And they sat when they were able to kind of come up with an understanding, like maybe we do need to train differently. So, and if, you know, some people know, don't people know, but you know, it's a podcast, to be honest, some people know, but I was approached a few years ago to participate in assisting in the police academy in training in the defensive tactics. And so for a couple years, because I was feeling some type of way myself, and I was like, maybe, and I didn't go look for it, but I could feel it, like, yo, there's something, like, you know, what am I going to do? What could I do? I do not want to be a police officer at all. And then when I was approached, because there were some people who understood, you know, and some martial training, and you know, that's a kind of a close-knit community and stuff, but there was a couple of people that was interacting. I was personally training a couple MMA fighters, and so they had came and said, can you please come, and we would like to invite you to at least, you know, do show us something, to do something with our cadets, you know. And one thing I had expressed, and I said, am I going to be working with anyone that has been on the police force? And they're like, well, we have programs. I was like, no, I don't want to get with anyone who's been on the job, because when they've been on the job, especially when they have more than about 3 years, 3 to 4 years, they've already locked in the mode of the culture that has been created that was dealing the problem that we're dealing with. So for me, I'd rather catch them just before they come out. Like, just like they don't know nothing. They are wet behind the ears. They don't know nothing. I'd rather get in, get down with them then, impart some seeds and some wisdom and some skills and technique, so that when they do come out there, when they do come out there, at least as it relates to the training piece itself, that they would have something. One thing that I've noticed when it relates to the training piece is that the defensive tactics, which is pretty much the mechanics of arrest, right? They only how long was the program that you were in?
8 months.
8 months, right? And the defensive tactics is only 40 hours, as long as it gets done within those 8 months. Ain't that deep? Some of the programs and extended programs, there was like 6 months, almost to a year. Man, they would have 40 to 50 hours of defensive time, and it spread out through those 8 months. So it was literally 1 hour once a week for the next 8 months or something like that. And I was like, the issue or problem that we're having is the defensive tactics, is the mechanics of arrest. And so you're only spending 1 hour a week. You know what I'm saying? How many hours a week did you do DT training?
Yeah, the way our academy was, we'd have it sometimes during PT, but really we had to get, think, 40, 50 hours. We got it done in a week towards the end of the academy.
Wow. Ain't that. And so what I was expressing, and some things are instituting, is that they need more defensive tactics. And even when you're in that type of mode, you're learning and stuff like that. Like, it's almost like, man, I done forgot 50% of the 90% of the stuff that I, you know what I mean? I know where my gun is. I know I need to reach for my gun. And if I feel threatened, not that my life is in danger, but if I feel threatened, I reach for the peace. If I'm trying to get compliance and they're not complying, I'm gonna reach for my peace. And so what happens is, these techniques, after a while, wind up creating these conditions, these situations that we're experiencing. So I just wanted to kind of just add that, and just you know, get some of your perspective about that
No,
as it relates to that.
I agree. What, like you said, it started up at the higher ups, because people don't think the police isn't for the community, but I mean, you don't just, like, the higher up commanders, chiefs, people weren't sure what to do, so that's what they start adding all these different classes, more training, maybe not focusing on DT, but focusing on sensitivity training, cultural training, all this stuff. So that's what the academy, what went from being 3 months to 8 months, you know, the standard MOPEC test in Pennsylvania. Like, that was one of the things, because I was one of the new classes when I started, and the academy, you know, the academy was forever. And to me personally, I'm not a slide person. Like, that, but that's what we're learning. We're learning, basically, they're trying to teach officers how to be nice and how to be respectful by slides. You know what I mean? That's something that's, you were, you it's either you were raised that way, or you are that person, or you weren't. You can't, that's not something that you can just turn off and on, personally, how I feel about it. I agree with you. The focus should be more on the defense tax, because that's, people have to understand, as an officer, your life is on the line. So situations, like, and you don't, the call, usually, I'll tell you this, usually a call that is get dispatched over the radio, it sounds 10 times worse than what it actually is when we get there. So we're already coming in at a heightened.
Say that again. Like, yeah, break that. Yeah, run that down. Break that down again. Say that again.
Oh, like, when we get a 911 call, it goes to the emergency center, and they dispatch a police unit or multiple units to the scene, and they're literally we're the third person hearing this. It's going from the caller to the dispatcher to us, and we're getting third party information, which is very, very limited. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Very.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. So go ahead. Continue.
And I think what the normal citizen, the average citizen, doesn't know, they think like, we don't know. Really, when we get on the call, we have a very vague information. We don't know what the heck is going on. So if we get a gun call, like I had a call, a dude is running outside with an AK, like, and they're threatened. They're scared he's going to shoot somebody. Okay? Like, just get up. Just think about this. I mean, so, okay, of course, we're gone. Phew, lights and sirens, code 3, we get in there. Phew, we get there quickly. We see the dude who matches description with the gun. We don't see no gun. There's another guy there. He's about to get in the car trying to take off. We get out. My gun's on him. I'm like, yo, show me your hands. Get on the ground. Before I ask any questions, I cuffed him. Cuffed the dude that matched the description. Cuffed the dude that I didn't even know who was involved. I just know he's with him because I don't know what's going on. And then we clear the car. We're clearing the car with the gun because we don't know who else is in the car, whatever. We're going off of very limited information. There's a little kid in the back. You know, my gun was pointing at him for a second. I'm like, oh, snap, there's a kid back here. And the dad, the one guy, the other guy, he's pissed because y'all pointing a gun at my son. And I'm trying to, I'm like, listen, I'm sorry, man. I don't know what's going on. You know, the dude ended up having a gun, but it was a whole situation where his girlfriend's stepdad came up here, beat his ass. You know what I mean? The family was jumping him. He got scared. He's running around. He grabs his gun and he's like, yo, I thought they was going to kill me. And he runs out the house. You know what I mean? So the family that assaulted him, they're the ones that's calling. So we're getting their side of the story. I catch this dude. I'm like, yo, what? I'm putting him in handcuffs, asking him like, what the hell happened to your face? You know what I mean? Keep it short. All in the end, we end up charging the stepdad for simple assault. But we got called for the dude with the gun, and he's the one that got handcuffed. You know what I mean? It's just, but people don't understand that. Our job, and I know our job is, it's going to ruffle people's feathers because it's going to make people upset sometimes. But I got to make sure that I'm trying to get home safe, you know, and I have an extra responsibility because I have a partner with me. You know what I mean? I want to make sure he gets home safe. And I know if I can control the situation, if people are cuffed and at least people are just not moving, that's less likely for me to feel threatened or hurt somebody or, you know what I mean? Just less variables and less possibility of anybody getting hurt. I'd rather have hurt feelings than somebody getting killed or having to go to the hospital.
Yo. Thank you. This is so important that this is heard and understood because I wanted this perspective to be given, but I wanted to be given from a non-white person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because coming from a white person who would be an officer of the peace or a police officer would still kind of be like, oh, now you're trying to ask for pity of them. But because we already understand the system of white supremacy and you have to deal with the system of white supremacy, even in the midst of the already mistreatment that you've been dealing with, here is this additive experience and additive struggle that you have to deal with, man. And so just that experience and just expressing that and understanding that, you know, I know one of the big things that we also have to learn that is that they feel like we shouldn't have to, but I'm going to be honest, is because of the condition, we have to sit down among ourselves, especially non-white people, how to properly engage and interact with somebody who has the ability to take your life.
Yeah. Brother Austin, yes. I mean, oh my
God. And so, on the equal point, I'll jump on our end, but one of the biggest things that, and also I want to also give you kudos because even while you were in the police academy and doing your training, you were still coming to come train with me and still getting more DT on top of the DT that was being done at the academy. So I also don't want to let that go. You still, and this is the other piece. One thing after they get done with the academy, they feel like they done and go. You still come and train even now, 2 years. You still come and train and get your training on even after being a police officer, because it's always constantly ongoing, man.
Got
And I
to,
appreciate
got to,
that.
man. I don't want. I didn't sign up to hurt anybody, man. Like that's not. I did not sign up for that. You know, I want to help. You know, and I'm here to protect and serve, not kill. You know.
Yeah, and one of the biggest things, as it relates to police officers, see, there's something that's called the rules of engagement,
Yes,
right?
sir.
And each facet, as it relates to military, because police officers are paramilitary, that there's rules of engagement as a citizen, as being a human being in a society. So in the military, that's the highest form of rule of engagement. You know what I mean? You identify the enemy and, you know, and discharge extreme prejudice. Like you identify the enemy and kill. That's a soldier. Then the one up under it comes to paramilitary, which would be your police officers, right? And they're duty bound to detain, arrest, and de-escalate for prosecution, right? Because the main thing is that you're duty bound to bring in for people to experience and have the habeas corpus, right?
Correct.
And then there's the citizen, and as it relates to duty, as your duty, your rule of engagement is for defense. So if somebody comes and tries to stab you, and you able to either get away, run away, or stop them from stabbing you, that is your rule of engagement. But if somebody comes and tries to stab you, and you're able to stop them from stabbing you, take that knife and you stab them. That's now you got to deal with a situation. Like, well, I was defending myself. And yeah, you were defending yourself. But some people, they don't understand that each facet of society where you stand at, they have a rule of engagement. And the thing of rule of engagement for police officers is that they're duty bound. They're duty bound to detain, arrest, and de-escalate. And what you were just saying was, I'm trying to get to the scene, and I'm coming in from limited information. And all I need to do is I need to handcuff, I need to stop people from moving so I can understand exactly what is going on. So de-escalating and de-escalation is a paramount part of being an officer of the peace.
Yes.
No. And so I just want to thank you for that and appreciate that.
Oh, no.
Is there anything else as it relates to being a non-white officer interacting with non-white people in the system of white supremacy?
Like I said earlier, it's, you know, I've learned that people always say like a lot of the frustration that people get out on the police, it's like more like it's at the uniform, not at the person. But I feel that being a black person in a police uniform, you sort of get both. Because I mean, people are gonna always fight back from authority, you know, even if they're in the wrong. It's just natural, you know? It's natural. But then you think, oh, but this person, he looks like me. You know what I mean? So now it's a double. So why is he doing this to me? You know? And like I've struggled with that. I'm not even gonna lie, Brother Austin. When I first started, it was tough. You know, it was tough because like I said before, the reason why I did it, I felt like it was so genuine, and then just to get that feedback from my people, you know, the people that I vowed to put my life on the line for. You know what I mean? It just, you know, it hurts a little bit,
Man.
but I've used, but also I can give being a black person in a uniform, it has that, but it also has a good aspect because when they see you, I can, they're gonna, when they, when I'm, if I'm talking, sometimes it's a little, I think they're more inclined to listen because it's relatable, you know, it's different. It's different hearing it from a non-white officer than a white officer. In certain, especially when it's a heightened situation, just like in certain situations, it's better for a female officer who can relate more to a female who might have been in kind of a sexual assault incident. You know, who it's she can relate, and they can, you know, vibe on that level to get the information needed to calm her down. So I can definitely attest to that. Like I've been, you know, I've been able to calm some hectic situations down. So I'm like, because, you know, some you, and it's like being bilingual. You know, you have to be able to write like an officer, talk like an officer, but on scene, you're like, yo, my man, come here. What are you, you know what I mean? And when they can hit, they can realize that you can talk on those different levels. When they hear that, he sounds like me, looks like me. You know what I mean? It's making sense. You understand?
You know, one of the conversations we had had before on one of the episodes, we talked about code switching and how being a non-white person, you have to learn how to code switch when you're around white people. We do that unconsciously, sometimes consciously. And so do you, as a non-white person, have to learn how to do that code switching as a police officer in the midst of being a police officer around white people? But if there is someone is like, I got to kind of switch the code out a little bit just to kind of make that situation a little bit more peaceful.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, there's a way that you have to talk to your coworkers, you know, your superiors, your sergeants and lieutenants. But it's so crazy because, you know, me being an alpha and like one of the palms and just like being able to walk with kings but not lose the common touch, you know, that relates with me even more now because that's how it is. Like, even though being an officer, you're on a certain level here, but you got to be able, not bring yourself down, but be able to bring it, bring yourself down to, but be able to understand the level that a person is at, so you can talk to them and relate to them and get what you need to get and get the information you need or handle the situation. You know what I'm saying? So I thought, yeah, you have to do that. But one thing I feel like I'm trying my best to do in the police work, I'm black. You know what I mean? I'm not, just because I'm a police officer, I like my trap music. I like my hip hop. I'm a police officer. I can't listen to that. No, I'm not going to change. I think a lot of my coworkers know I'm unapologetically black. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean I'm ghetto or doesn't mean that the black that they might portray. No, I'm black. You know what I mean? I can like hockey just as much as I like basketball. You know, I can relate. I can sit there and talk with you about hockey. Are you going to sit here and listen to me talk about basketball? Can you relate to me? Because it's different. They don't have to do that because they're always around. They're the majority, so they don't have to really think about that.
Real quick, and then we go to the next part of it. But has there ever been experience where you were dealing with somebody who was non-white, and then you ran into them in the community or in the same hood, and they remember that interaction that you had with, like, you know what I mean? You have like a, because I remember one time you had posted something that happened in the barbershop or whatever. I really want to just dropped it, like, just explain, or, you know, just explain what happened there, you know, all that. What happened.
Oh, man, this was real. The dude that was recently, the dude just happened. I'm in the barbershop waiting to get cut, and the dude walks in. I'm like, yo, he looked rough. Oh, I arrested him. And, you know, naturally, it's like, oh, snap. I don't know how this is going to be. Like, is he going to try to fight? You know, I don't got my, you know what I mean? I'll tell you right now, when I'm in my hood, I'm in my neighborhood, I don't carry my gun. You know what I mean? Because I don't feel, I'm around my people. I don't need it. I don't feel like I need it. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I don't even got it.
And you know what? You've been training, and man, you're so solid, bro. You don't even need a gun when you're an officer. I'll just go ahead and say it, man. You that bad. You a bad man. I'm gonna let you know that right now.
Nah, I appreciate
you. Don't even.
I mean,
really,
nah, I appreciate,
man.
It.
You think you've seen some Mortal Kombat? You ain't seen Officer Grover get busy, man. Forget that.
Forget. I tell him, y'all don't want to see me in that light, but. But and like it was crazy, so we made eye contact. He looked at me, and I was like, gave him the head nod, you know, universal. And he's like, "Yo, Officer Bruce." I was like, "Oh, hey, what's up, man? Hey, man, what's good?" I was like, and then he's like, "Yo, can I ask you a question?" And you know, he was just and then now he's asking about some situation, like, you know, I had to call the police because my girlfriend's best, like, getting to some, I need help. Then so I'm like, I'm giving him some jewels, just giving him what to do, some info, and then. You know, I don't know why I felt bad, but I couldn't avoid. I had to take him to jail, and I apologized. I was like, "Look, man, you know, it's nothing personal with my job. It's just I can't certain stuff, especially when it comes to domestic violence. I can't ignore." He's like, "Nah, man, it's cool." He's like, "Don't worry." I was like, "I just got a new job. You know, I'm working out here, and just and then like, damn. You know what I mean?" And just it, So now we have that. It's like we now we have this little camaraderie, this little friendship. So now I see him now. We heading on. Hey, what's up, Officer Bruce? This is the man I arrested. This is the man I took to jail, brother Austin. It baffled me, and it was one of the most humbling and like positive feelings I've had on the job. I was like, you know what I mean? Damn, like that's great.
Wow. Man. Man, again, man, I appreciate that you out there like that, being an officer of the peace. And I keep reiterating an officer of the peace because one thing that I even work with my sons and even trying to teach them or anybody, if you are coming across a police officer and you feel like they're being irate or you feel like they are tripping or being extra or you feel like, man, you just ask one very simple question. Are you an officer of the peace or a police officer? And right there, they say, man, give me out your gun. Why are you being funny, man? What are you laughing at? Excuse me, sir. Are you an officer of the peace or are you a police officer? And every single time, and I've interacted with police officers, and when I started training, it was different. But beforehand, I had learned to ask the question to or to learn how to minimize conflict, especially with racist white people and conflict, and even with non-white people. I've learned the skill of de-escalating conflict by asking questions. But asking very poignant questions at very poignant times. That is a skill that you have to learn and develop. And so, one of those things that I had learned to develop when it came to police was to ask them, never to make statements, but ask. And even in the height of it, and you didn't even say anything yet, and the first thing you ask and say, you ask, are you an officer of the peace? Or are you a police officer? And what it does is, remember when I asked you, because the way they've been trained, the way they've been taught, it forces them to deal with that 8 months of training of the sensitivity training and all of that. It's like almost like it's like a code word that snaps their behavior. I've seen it be, I mean, and they were super irate. I remember I was standing one time and I was downtown and I was leaning and the glare of the thing was like, I was trying to look on my phone. So I leaned into the corner where the shadow was to get the glare so I could see my phone. And the police kind of pulled up behind me. I didn't know. And they said, hey, what are you over here? And they just stepped out of the car. And I look at them. And they're like, what are you doing? What are you taking a leak? And I'm sitting there like, what? And I'm startled. And then one cuts out of the car. The other one comes out. The other one puts his hands on his gun. And immediately, as soon as I see it, I said, excuse me, officer, are you an officer of the peace or are you a police officer? What? What did you say? What? Are you an officer of the peace or a police officer? And they just, what were you doing? I was just looking at my phone. The glare, I couldn't see, so I had to turn in. And he just looked and looked. And even though it was like that, they calmed down and rolled. And then there was like, all right. And they turned around and left.
Yeah, man.
It happened like a thing. So those are key and skill. And if anyone is listening, that is something that is so helpful. And you'll see because what you're doing is you're calling them to remember. I mean, they could be super irate, like you said, man. They could be having it's on their discretion, so they're totally in their feelings and their emotions. So if they're in their feelings and their emotions, they're and the way they've been trained, man, it's almost Pavlovian. It's like a bell, bung, certain words or certain key phrases, it'll just snap them back in, and it'll help kind of de-escalate the situation, and it'll get them in mode to start helping trying to de-escalate. Now, sometimes there's been experiences where they just come guns blazing. We've seen it, and they're not even talking. They just come out the car shooting, you know, and those things don't happen. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just pray that, you know, that doesn't happen. You have an opportunity to communicate and do something. But if not, you know, that's the best thing. I wanted to ask you, this is a tough question, so please, how do you deal with being a non-white person, particularly black, and deal with the badge or the blue code of silence or the badge code of silence that are among or proliferated among police officers?
Yeah, that's a tough question because, I mean, that's real. I mean, being a young officer right now, it's like I try to pick and choose my battles when to trying to delve into that, just because, you know, being with being a police officer and a type of profession, the respect comes with time. You know what I mean? The more, like, the first person, like, the first person, they'll look at your badge number. Like, oh, your badge number for us signifies how long you've been on. He's got a relatively high, he's new. You know what I mean? Or he look, or he's young. He hasn't been on that long. So sometimes your words is sometimes going deaf ears because they're like, well, what do you know about the job? You only been, you still wet behind the ears. You still got, I can still smell your, you still got your academy notebook in your bag or something like that. You know what I mean? So I try to pick and choose my battles with that. And it's tough. I ain't gonna lie. Like, here's, I think I might have told you this, Brother Austin, but it, shoot, it's like my first 3 weeks of field training. I'm out the academy. I'm on zone two on the hill. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those defining moments. Like, I couldn't have lived with myself if I didn't say nothing. But I was kind of scared because, you know, being field training, you're getting graded by your officer, by your field training officer. But we get a call for an irate group of black juveniles or just black people down at the McDonald's on Wood Street. And we go down there. And at this time, I think I'm the only black officer on PM shift for zone two. Like, it happens a lot. So I'm down there and we're just trying to get this dude to go. And I'm trying to pull him to the side like, yo, my man, just leave. Like, you in the wrong. So what, you make it worse, just go. Like, you're acting the fool in the store. The manager wants you to leave. Just go. You know what I mean? Just like, you're not, just move. Nah, they going crazy. And then I'm trying to, and then this one officer says, he's like, yeah, get your shit out of here. You know what I mean? Like, this, like, it's like, we ain't gonna be dealing with shit. Trump's about to be president. We ain't dealing with the shit. He ain't dealing with your shit no more. You know, boom, boom, boom. He says that. I mean, ignites a fire in it.
And we ain't gonna deal with this. Trump's about to be president. We ain't got to deal with this shit. Yeah. Because he was doing it because obviously Obama was president. So that equals his arrogance for him to act up in the fucking McDonald's. Ain't that about it?
Yeah. And when I tell you it ignited a fire in this dude, I'm like, oh, I'm like, yo, just go. And like, but initially, once he said that, and there's other black people around, and like, so I'm feeling some type of way because I'm new as heck. I don't know the job that well. I literally walked away. I was like, I can't stand with these group. I can't stand around this dude for that. No, it wasn't my field officer.
You can't even stand around that officer
no,
who did.
No, I was like, man, and the black people looked at me. It's like, yo, that's racist. I was like, I'm walking away. I'm like, I can't. I had to walk away because I'm just like,
and, wow.
But the crazy thing is, Austin, you know what I mean? So that, to make a short story, to make it, to bring it together.
My fault, to bring it together.
So now we're getting a call. My FTO was like, you know, now the officer who said the Trump stuff is following him while the dude's walking away. They're just drawing back and forth. You know what I mean? The black's like, F you, you ain't tough without no badge. He's like, yeah. And, you know, they're antagonizing each other. And my FTO's like, let's follow them. Like, so we're following the other officers. He's like, so do you think we can arrest them? And I'm already feeling bad about this whole situation. I'm like, I said, honestly, because he can tell something. I'm not, my face. I'm like, honestly, no. No, I mean, like, yeah, he's being irate. But like, once that officer said that Trump stuff, like, to rile him up, that it's null and void. Like, you can't arrest him for that. You can't. I mean, he's being disorderly. He's defying trespass. He's refusing to leave. But he was instigated.
We coaxed and instigated it.
You know, and luckily, like, nothing happened because I wasn't going to arrest him. You know what I mean? I didn't feel comfortable telling the other officer, like, not my FTA, but the other officer, like, because he's got more time on. He's on SWAT and all that extra stuff. I don't got time on. So my I'm new. I don't even know these dudes. You know what I mean? But glad nothing happened. But that, I had to stand up to my field. I was like, nah, like, I'm not arrested. I can't. I'm not arresting them. Once you coax them and you antagonize them and instigate it, it's like null and void. You can't do nothing. You started this. You made this. You know what I mean?
That's that duty bound. You're duty bound to detain, arrest, and de-escalate. Mm-hmm. Part of your duty is to not heighten the situation more than what it was before you got there. And that is a big thing. And I think I can see that. And I can see, that's why when I express, man, I'm not trying to work with no officers who've been on the job, because they're so stuck in their ways. They're so stuck because what winds up happening, this is a high stress situation. This is a high stress experience.
Yeah.
And whatever you've done to make it home that night, in your brain, you're like, everything that you did was right, because guess what? You're standing in your house right now. So whatever you did today was exactly what you needed to do because you're walking home to you're in the house with your family. So tomorrow, when you go out,
do the same thing.
Make sure you at least, same at thing. The very least, do what you did today. And so little by little, shit starts happening. And then you've been on a job, like old boy was on SWAT. He's done had more than 5 to 10, almost 20 years on the job. And so he didn't have 20 years of, listen, I know exactly what I need to do how I need to do to get home. And then little piece by little, well, today, when you got smart with this one person, and that's what happened, look, you made it home today. Tomorrow, at the very least, you got to at least get smart with, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden, it starts compiling, and you're just like, yo, I'm trying to get home. And then you look up 15 years on the job, and you're just like, yo, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? Like, what do you do? You don't understand. Like, he's trying to get home, and all these little pieces that he's doing, he's assuming, he's associating that that's his ability to make it to be safe. He's associating that I have to mistreat, or, you know, I have to instigate with these people and not instigate with these. You know what I mean? It's very particular. It's not synonymous. It's not like, okay, I'm going to do it and it happens to me. No. It was done with a non-white person, particularly a black one. Tomorrow, when I see a non-white person, a black one, and they exhibit the same behavior, I need to be the same way I was with this one that I am going to be with that one, because when I did it with this one, I made it home.
See, but Brother Austin, my issue with that is it's not this mm-hmm. reciprocated with white people. Like there's more patience, more leniency. I feel like sometimes I'm just like.
Wow.
You know what I mean? You see a traffic stop or you see an incident where somebody gets slammed or, you know what I mean? And as a black person with a white officer, I always like, would he do that if that was a white person? Put a white person in that same exact scenario acting the same way. I've seen white women cuss out cops, go crazy. I pay your taxes. Da, 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 da. Ma'am, you need to calm down. Ma'am, you need to come. You know what I mean? There's all this patience here. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I feel like it might be that way with non-whites or people of color. But I think they look at it differently when it's somebody that looks like them. That's why I try to get people to. It's just somebody that looks like. It's just natural. You are going to look out for people. I don't care. You're going to look out for people that look like you.
Now, question. I want you to be honest with me. Since you are a non-white person and you've exhibited, given some examples of how y'all with non-white people, how are you with white people as an officer of the peace being a non-white person?
Oh, I'll keep it up. I've noticed these issues, and which is why I would maybe want to be a police officer. So I am constantly always trying to not be that person. I can say I try to like, I've written people tickets, towed their cars, taken their place, black, white, blue, yellow, whatever. And one of my FTOs said, you know, if you can do your job, and at the end of it, they're saying thank you. You know what I mean? That you done your job right. So I can personally say for me, it's a little bit more work to be that way with white people sometimes, especially when they get into their little funk. Because I've been called nigger like at least 5 times by white people since I started being a police officer.
Wait. They didn't use the word. They didn't use. They didn't said. They didn't called you a nigger. Mm-hmm. While you were.
Oh yeah, I got called a nigger by a homeless white dude who I gave. He's during the pirate season. He's down there by the river, having his penis out, whatever, you know, in public. But there's little kids, so we go down there. I'm like, my man, please, I'm not trying to ruin. It's nice outside. I'm not trying to ruin your day. But we got children. We got families. You can't keep your stuff in your pants. All right, officer. You know what I mean? He's drunk as heck. But I'm trying to be cool. You know what I mean? I'm trying to be cool. We get a call down there again. Like, now we're here again. We can't leave him because he's going to keep doing the same thing. So, you know, we had to take him to jail. For the 15-minute ride down to the jail because it's traffic, I mean, I got to call me nigger, call him, talk about my bottom lip. You know what I mean? And my partner was white. So he's getting at him too. And, you know, my partner's getting mad because I have to deal with this stuff. But I'm just like, you know what I mean? I got called a nigger by a homeless white man who don't got a pot to piss in. That just shows.
Yo, that's the real list. Man, we were just, a couple episodes, even the really one, even when they are white and they are poor, I gave this analogy because of the way the system white supremacy is, mm-hmm. right? Even when white people are poor,
they still think they better.
And the way you're looking at a baby cub lion that is waiting and wanting to become grown. And because no matter, even especially when they're poor, when they don't have a pot to piss in, they still have power. And even when they exemplify that power, it don't even, man, come on. This is that real, man. Just, oh, bro.
Come on, bro. You know I'm going to keep it real.
But do you see how deep that is?
Bruh.
You see how deep that is?
I was pissed. I was like, you catch me on news beating up a homeless dude in handcuffs, and then I go to jail because like this man called me a nigger like 15 times. Oh. I was hot. I was mad. I was sick. I was like,
you know what? White people who say that they're poor and they're all people that don't have no money or whatever, they associate that them being poor or them being uneducated or them not having money is that it automatically gets rid of their actions and their ability to practice racism, white supremacy. And they don't understand that you being poor, you not having money and things of that nature, you will still mistreat a non-white person. Even if it's perceived that we're in a position of authority, you still will mistreat, disrespect a non-white person, man.
Mm-hmm. Or you'll blame us for your mishaps of being poor. You know what I mean? Uneducated. You know what I mean? Yep.
Wow. Wow.
America.
That's deep. That is so deep. So how, last part of this, how do you, this code of silence or this blue code of silence?
Yeah.
Is it true that even though you are a non-white person, you're black, particularly black, are you black and then blue, or you're blue first, then black?
Blue
is a uniform, or are you black then the uniform?
I look at it like I'm black first, because I know when I'm not in this uniform, it is very easy to be like, you know, to face the systematic racism that all black Americans face today. So I mean, that doesn't, like, you know what I mean? They don't know, they can't, if they don't see my badge, I'm a black man. You know what I mean? I accepted that. Like, I don't know, this whole blue thing, like the Blue Lives Matter, I hate when cops get killed, because a lot of the times these dudes are getting killed, I've literally answered the same calls, same situations. It's just on that end, somebody decided they were going to take somebody's life. You know what I mean? Which kind of makes it surreal for me, because I was like, dang, I've literally had a traffic stop where a dude got out and ran and I chased him. But luckily he didn't have a gun, or he might have threw it this time and didn't turn around and try to shoot me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because they're playing with no rules. We have rules. Like, you can't just chase after somebody who ran out of a traffic stop and shoot him in the back. Tennessee versus Gardner, mm-hmm. eliminate. You cannot, unless it's a fleeing felon, and he's a danger to yourself, danger to surrounding the other peoples. That's Supreme Court case law. You will go to jail. That is murder. But here's the thing. Remember when that South Carolina officer shot that black man who was running because he had a warrant for child support?
Right.
And he shot him in the back. And then he got caught planting the taser on him, trying to make it seem like there was a tussle and that it was a justified shooting. Now, just think of that young black man who was recorded. He never recorded that. That officer would have got away with murder. Technically, he's still dead because the jury, which was a black man they had a unanimous vote. Almost a unanimous vote, but the black man who was on the jury said he couldn't convict the cop, and that's how he got off. look it up. I'm telling you, look it up.
Listen, in the system of white supremacy, don't you understand that non-white people will protect white people even when it's so blatant that the mistreatment and subjugation is as plain as a fucking videotape.
Mm-hmm. Look,
we are that infected. Oh,
yep. But that, I didn't mean to go off like that. But to the blue light,
this is real too. Listen, this is probably going to be the most informative and real episodes on here so far, man. Because I've never really even come across somebody who at least kind of presented a platform, an opportunity to have this kind of real dialogue and have this dialogue in that perspective within the context of racism, white supremacy.
Well, and that's the thing, but Austin, like, I love, like, I remember the Deltas at Duquesne. I went over there and I was dropping knowledge to people on as a black, like, cause when I'm black. So like it's sort of true. So it's just like, okay, he's an officer, but he's black, so like I'm gonna listen a little bit, you know what I mean? And I'm just keeping it real with him. I'm like, y'all thinking like, so I think the police, you're not telling secrets, but you need to let people know your procedures a little bit and explain why officers might like why I do this. I tell, like, on a traffic stop, Austin, I let them know my name is Officer So and So from the Pittsburgh Police. You know what I mean? Just so you know, this traffic stop is being audibly and visually recorded, and the reason why I stopped you, you know, and that's why I think we don't have a lot of incidents that the other cities and states might have, because that's verbal judo. You know, we're trained in the police, the Pittsburgh Academy, we're trained to operate our traffic stops like that. That's your spiel every time. You need to let the person know who you are, that they're being recorded, because that can sort of calm it down, and let them know why you're stopping them. That eliminates half the battle, because somebody who's right be wanting to kill you because he knows he has a warrant, you let him know, hey man, I pulled you over because you didn't use your turn signal back there.
Say it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
If they think, oh, they know that I have a warrant, mm-hmm. that's why they pulled me over.
Yep.
And I got this pistol right here. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And something that I like that you said called verbal judo. So people who are listening, that's an actual book that you can get. It's called Verbal Judo, and I use verbal judo even in the midst of why I'm even using real judo at the same time. You know what I'm saying? I just took all teams first state in this competition. I don't even compete, but I needed to compete, I guess. So I competed, but in the midst of why we were doing our thing, I'm talking to him. I'm talking to him, and it's taking him out of his game at the same time while we're doing the judo thing. I'm talking to him, and you know, and it just bothered him a little bit. and at one part, he's just like, can you tell him to stop talking to me? And the ref is looking at him like, I don't know what you're talking about. So I'm you guys like, oh man, this is gonna be a long one. Just be easy with me, because I'm trying to eat cake after this. And so like he escalated. I'm using the verbal judo while I'm still doing real judo.
Oh man, they don't know you're dangerous, man. They don't know.
No, no. That's the best way. I don't want you to know. You can't know. I don't even know nothing, man.
Yeah, you crazy.
I did want to slide into segue into that. How has training been, martial training? Because I'm a big proponent of martial training. How has your experience training in martial arts and not know? Well, I want you to talk about it. But how has that helped? How has that helped you? And you've been maintaining your training and martial training while you've been an officer.
Martial training has been huge. I came to you out of, and you know, if we're being transparent, I came to you because I was afraid. You know, it was a job that I was like, I feel like I need to do this, but you know, it's crazy when you put your name on the dotted line and you put yourself in the fray and you don't feel like you're fully equipped. You know what I mean? And that's how a lot of officers might feel, and that's what these situations turn so deadly, because they're not equipped to handle physically, which is so like with martial arts, that physically is like, you know, you knowing how to protect yourself, defend yourself, de-escalate, but also just being in shape. You know what I mean? That's all the component. Martial arts helps you get that. because with you're in your best shape and you're, I'll break it down like this. Like martial arts for me with you, when I came, because, you know, I was afraid. I felt like I was a bigger dude, so dudes are going to just try me off rip. And I didn't want to hurt anybody, but, you know, being a police officer, you're in a fight that you can't afford to lose. You know what I mean? Because, you know, there's always one gun involved to shore. So I feel like I needed something. And with martial arts, it gave me that confidence to know if it came down to it, I can defend myself to the death. I'm fully confident now. But also, it just gave me that peace of mind. You know what I mean? Show me what to look for if somebody's being extra aggressive. You know what I mean? How to dictate a situation and how to handle it if it goes this way, it goes that way. It made me look at, I can look at an incident 5-6 different ways and know, all right, this, if he does this, I'm gonna handle it that way. If he does this, I'm gonna do that. You know what I mean? And that's, I think martial arts, it just gives you that peace of mind and it gives you that confidence to defend yourself. So now you're in a situation. Yo, this dude, you know, 6'4", 250. How am I going to take him down if it comes down to it? You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, if he runs at me, I'm just pulling my gun. It's like, nah, what now? How am I going to break this tree now? You know what I mean? What's the weak points? You know, what's his strength? Is it? He probably don't got no ground game. So, you know what I mean? I'm probably going, you know what I mean? It's situations like, you know, that's how I'm thinking now. You know what I mean? And that's why I will always be forever grateful for you for that. Cause you open it, just it's like to me, open the third eye for me. You know what I mean? It opened the third eye for me, and so now it's like I love that feeling. I love having that, just that confidence. So that's why I continue to do it. You know, and that's why I work out. And that's why I work out.
Man, I just want to tell you, I appreciate that, man, and I appreciate you taking the time to a little bit. I know a little something, and I'm glad that you're at least get something from that, man. And I love you for that, for real. I love you for that. Because I know you're out there and you're really out there trying to handle and be an officer of the peace, you know. And I'm a proponent for being an officer of police. A police officer, that's something different. But an officer of the peace, that is always needed. And I think I respect that 100%. I respect that absolutely.
I appreciate it.
So I wanted to get back in some codification real quick, right?
All right.
And I'm going to ask this. I just want you to be honest, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to keep it real, man. We're dealing with system of white supremacy and understanding your stance and experience. I ask this question all the time. Doesn't matter whether you're white or non-white. Have you ever engaged in sexual interaction and or sexual play with a white person, male or female?
A white female once.
White female once. Okay. Now, in that interaction that you had with this white female, was the system of white supremacy in existence when that happened?
Yes.
Okay. This interaction that you had with this white female, did you feel or were you aware that you were taken advantage of?
No.
Why not?
I mean, at that moment, you're not thinking on that level. You're thinking about one thing of mine,
right? But even in that experience, you weren't aware. So, were you being taken advantage of, and you weren't aware of it?
I mean, I don't believe I was. No.
No.
No, I don't believe I was. No.
Okay. In the system of white supremacy, are white people in a position of power?
Yes.
Okay. You being a non-white person, are you subject to that power?
No.
I'll ask again. You being a non-white person and white people are in a position of power, are you subject? Are you subject to that power?
Oh, Oh, I was thinking you're asking as like, do I have opportunity to get that power? That's why. You're subject to it. Yes.
Okay. Cool. All right. Got you. All right. Cool. Now, question: would it be appropriate for a teacher to have sex with a student?
No.
Okay. Would it be appropriate for a prison guard to have sex with a prisoner?
No, it wouldn't.
Would it be appropriate for an officer to have sex with somebody that they, you know, come across that, on a call? Like, you know, you get called to deal with someone and you have a sexual encounter while you were on the job when you got called to deal with somebody.
No.
Right?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, because all of those situations. See, this is what I'm going to ask. How is it in all those situations where the power dynamic is what causes the inappropriateness for sexual interaction to happen, but when it comes to white people and they're in a position of power, why is it not seen or understood that it is inappropriate as well because of the power dynamic that white people have with non-white people?
I mean, Brother Austin, I think because it's not very clear. You know, if you're not it's not a clear power dynamic when from basically just a, you know, you go to work, she goes to work, or he go to work, whatever. Like, it's not something that you see it's not in plain view. You know what I mean? It's not until
is it happening though, even if you're not aware of it?
It's happening even if you're not aware of it, but if you're not aware of it, it's just not something that you're either thinking about or some people you might not even know. You know, people don't see that because it's like, well, how is he or she more powerful than me? You know, we're the same person. We love each other. Dun, dun, dun. But it's all then like my pops told me, it's all good and dandy until, you know, you're in a situation, you know, especially being a black man, a white woman, and let her feel threatened or feel unsafe.
Right. Right.
And then the police come or authorities come and they see, you know what I mean, a black man with a white woman. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, there's a lot of insecurities probably pop up with that, you know, bigger penis. You know, he's only messing with her because, you know what I mean, trying to take her a white woman, and she only like him because he got big this and all. You know what I mean?
Look at that. See, you're describing exactly that situation was an extreme potential. When you laid with that white woman, correct?
Well yeah, it's extreme potential, but that's happened to me, so that's why I said only once. Like, other than that, I learned my lesson, and I don't go down that road. I mean, I don't go down that road no more.
You know what? What was the lesson? What I mean, without being too, you know what I mean, but I want you to be honest. What was it that came? See, okay. What was it that came out of? What was the lesson? There was a lesson to learn from that. So what was the lesson?
I'm gonna tell my son this. I'm like, white women are dangerous, man. Like, they don't even realize. It's like women in general are, I feel like they get the sympathy of the law. You know, stuff is sort of in their favor when it comes to, you know, feeling unsafe and danger. Because, you know, we're naturally stronger than them, we're bigger than them. So laws are in place.
It's completely different when you start saying, don't say just women, because it's completely different when it comes to white women.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
In this context.
Yes, that's what I'm saying in general. So then when you add that white component into it, it's even worse. You know what I mean? You know, now they're not even trying to listen to your side of the story. They automatically, wow. You okay, ma'am? You know what I mean? And then a white woman situation where she's scorned and she wants to get back at you. Women do some crazy stuff. I've seen it. Women do some crazy stuff when they're hurt.
I don't want to. Be specific.
Okay.
Is it women or is it white women? From your experience, you can only speak from your experience, the one that came and that was scorned, that literally almost destroyed your life. Was that a black woman that did that?
No,
Right. All right. Let's keep it 100. I want you to speak about you. I don't want you to speak about nobody else. We're speaking about you what your perspective. And I respect, and this, I don't have no issue, no problem. Yes, it's not like that for every other people, but I'm not talking to every other people. I'm talking to you. And right now, from your experience, when you did do it that one time, it was extremely detrimental, almost to the point. In fact, so now that we look back at it, I'm going to ask you, were you taken advantage of when you engaged in that sexual encounter with this white woman, even though you weren't aware of it?
Yes. Yeah. And I say to this, if it wasn't for the relationships I built in that situation and the people knew my character and the person mm-hmm. that I was, mm-hmm. man, I could have lost a lot.
Could have lost your life.
I could.
It's not that it used to be. There are still non-white men, particularly black men, who are dying right now for their sexual interactions with white women. Right now. So it's not even like, oh, they used to do that. No. What they used to do, they used to just lie. They used to say, man, they whistled. Whistling at them was enough to turn you into an Emmett Till.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? That's what they used to. They used to was looking at them differently. They used to was smiling at them or saying hello. That was the used to. Now we going full-fledged in. We totally committed. We're committing these sexual acts. And they are dying. You know what the thing that I'm getting across though, and again, it's not that I'm trying to like monitor people's bedroom activity. That's not what I'm doing. Okay?
Yeah.
But what I am asking, and what I am suggesting, is that we have a critical and constructive observation and awareness of what we are doing. And so everything that we do as it relates to human activity, sex is one of those things. And it's one of the most powerful interactions as human beings that we have. And it's extremely influential.
Mm-hmm.
And I am under the belief, this is what I believe, that if we have a constructive understanding and awareness about our sexual activity with white people while they are in power, it will help kind of change the issues that we're having with the mistreatment and subjugation. Because when we are having sex, we are clouded in our judgment and we're confused about what's going on. Because we think everything is okay because I'm having a sexual experience with the representation of the person or people that are in power. You think everything is all right when you can kick it with the boss and have sex with the boss. Yo, even though this is my boss, he and I are sharing something very intimate and I got something on the inside. Like, you know what I'm saying? That is a very confusing situation. Yep. And what was happening is, honestly, if we really honestly look at it, there are 10 areas that of activity that needs to be dealt with individually. But all those 10 areas compiled together as it relates to what you experience as a human being is controlled and influenced by white supremacy. And one of those areas is sex. And if you don't really kind of have a critical and constructive manner about how we deal with sexual activity while white people are in power, we are going to be taken advantage of every single time. My thing is this, and this is what I express. I am not against having sexual interaction and or sexual play with white people. But first, let's get rid of racism. Let's get rid of white supremacy. Then when that is gone, Then we're on equal playing ground, and yet, man, we can go at it like rabbits, man.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
a sexual encounter is a physical and an intimate expression of two people being of equal footing and of equal sharing, right? Mm-hmm. But because of the context, because this sexual encounter that you had with a white woman and any other non-white person, whether it be with a white woman or a white man, you guys are not like taking off into space and going to a different dimension. And so where white supremacy doesn't exist, you're doing it while they're in power. And then the extra piece is this. The white person knows this. See, even though you were not aware that you were being mistreated, right? She was completely 100% aware. Why? Because she knew racism has existed, and she knew that how white supremacy racism is set up, she represents the people who are in power. And she knew right off the bat. And you want to know even why she even knew? Because after it was done, she turned around and said, you know what? I was actually taken advantage of. He did this and such and such and such and such and such and such and got that whole mess going on you were dealing with. So she knew before that. She didn't just come to an epiphany after laying with a black man being like, you know what? How can I deal with it? No, she knew that beforehand.
She knew what she had in her favor. She knew what she had in her favor. Come on.
Listen, they all do. If any non-white person, particularly black person who's listened to this, I'm telling you right now, any and every sexual interaction that you had with a white person and they were over the age of 16, they knew exactly what the fuck time it was. They always knew, man. They are not stupid. They are not unaware of anything. Nothing. We may be unaware. We may be stupid about this, but they are not. And I'm imposing and expressing that we need to become aware. We need to figure out how this is working, because it's not helping. It's not working. Because think about this. With all the non-white people who have been having sexual encounters with white people, has that minimized or gotten rid of or made better or gotten rid of this racism thing, this race problem?
No.
All right. Okay. So what happens when we start doing the same thing over and over again expecting a different result?
It's called what? Psychotic or something? Crazy?
That's called insanity. It's called insanity. We are insane. That's why, man, I told man, we are sick. We are sick. We are doing shit with white people over and over again, expecting
a different result.
And it's never, it has never happened. It has never happened. And when it comes to this part right here, the sex part, and I mean, I talk to brothers. I'm going to be talking to some sisters and stuff like that, man. I asked this particular question right off the rip. You know what I mean? This is one thing, you know, if they come to the podcast, listen, you're going to talk to, he's going to ask you, have you been down with white people, man? And you're going to have to figure out, you're going to have to really try to figure out, like, what does that really mean? Because this is real. And guess what? They think it's taboo, right? They think you're like, oh no, let's not talk about that. No. Let's talk about that, because that's one of the underpinnings that's allowing this shit to proliferate. We don't got to teach. And this is the other thing. We don't got to teach white people, you know, they need sensitivity training, or we need to teach them about black culture and black history. First of all, they're the ones that taught you about your culture and your history. You ain't got to tell them shit. They know everything. Matter of fact, guess what? They got a museum everywhere they live with pieces of your culture from your African history. And you got to pay. And you got to pay to go see it. It's your shit. You got to pay to go see it. And you got to go see it in their buildings. So you don't got to teach white. We don't got to teach white people nothing about us, man. They know more about us than we know about us.
Yeah, bro, come on. I was just saying that to somebody the other day.
They know more or less than. White people know more about us than we know about ourselves. Let's be real, man. This is kind of racist logic. All right. I'm not giving them power than more than what they don't already have. The issue is that you've never realized how much power they really have. You know, that's why they'd be like, man, Austin, man, you talk about this too much. Or, man, you give white people too much power. No, man. I don't give them nothing that they don't already have. You just didn't realize how much shit they really had. That's what it is. you just coming to the realization how fucked up this really was really going on. And all I'm doing is just saying, hey, man, does this seem like this was inappropriate? Do we not already understand that this was okay? All right, okay.
Hey, Brother Austin, but today I feel like, you know what I mean? A lot of people aren't told that, man.
When you say people, are you talking about white people or non-white people?
A lot of non-white people aren't taught that.
There we go.
Because we're at this age now. We're all together. We're all this. We're all that. Well, you know, my pop taught me, kept it a buck when he said, "Stay away from them white women. They get you in trouble." That's all he said, but he will repeat it all the time.
How can I explain it? Man, just stay away from them, boy. They get you in trouble.
I'm like, what are you talking about? And he would give an example. He's like, man, give me a little examples. White girl got a bad report card. So she lied and said she was raped. Like, it's like another, like, I don't even know if these was real stories, but it scared the crap out of me. He told me, like, and then you know what? She said it was three black dudes. So they just find three black dudes on the street. You know what I mean? Grab them up. You know, guilty.
I suspect that was true. Yes.
And because
it is in the system of white supremacy, that scenario has probably happened somewhere in the ether. So I'm not surprised.
Well, let me ask you this, Austin, because this is my mom, who's a black woman. Now she says never underestimate what the power of a white woman, or the power of a white woman, or what she would do to, like, not upset her dad, not upset her daddy. What's the validity of that? Is that really, like, you know, can you break that down to me?
what your mother is speaking about is known as white fragility. Mm-hmm. And the white fragility, as it's taught now, is the sensitivity of white people. But the basis is the support and the protection of white womanhood, of white femininity. Mm. You see, what happens is the impetus or the inertia that is created for the mistreatment as it relates from white men is validated by their perceived idea of protecting white purity, particularly white women. Because women altogether are vulnerable, and especially white women are extremely vulnerable to non-white men, as you were giving the examples, they feel that they have to protect it at all costs. And if you look at old Klan meetings, right? Mm-hmm. Or you look at old Klan talkings, or if you look and you'll see, or you listen to something that's called the 18 words, right? This is code talk among suspected white supremacists, right? When they say 18 words, you'll see the number 18 and you'll see that, right? And what it is a phrase that speaks about ultimately protecting white women or protecting the children or ultimately protecting white womanhood. And because these white women understand and see this, they'll use that ability or be afraid of that because they know initially they created or they're creating the drive for this mistreatment to happen astronomically. So that feeling, like, you know what I'm saying, to get back at them is the one thing that my daddy will get irate about, will be the one thing that I'm gonna try to do to get the most, you know, the biggest response out of them. And what happens is, as collateral damage, a black male winds up being mistreated or subjugated because of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I believed it, but I didn't really understand it. But because, like, she also would say, she was like, she said, if it comes down, they'll be your friends and do all this, but when it comes down, they will always choose themselves before you.
Yeah, and that's not even you need to be real specific, man, because what happens is what we start doing is we start putting things in a very, like, ambiguous term.
Okay.
Like them, us, me. And so what happens is you'll start agreeing with their behavior because you believe that you behave the same way, right? So you got to, that's what I'm being, no, be specific. No, no. So white people will always support and protect their position as white people. Not they will always protect them. No, because then you're going to be like, well, I'm going to do the same thing. And that's the trick. See, the trick is to get non-white people to act and think like white people, right? Mm-hmm. And how we interact and how we see things. So it's like, no, man, everybody does that. That's where that comes. That's why it's hard for them to be like, no, everybody's racist. Everybody does this. We're not just white people. All people do this. No. You're trying to normalize what the fuck you've been doing by making it seem everybody fucking does it. And when you do that,
We never deal with the initial issue that started this shit in the first place. Because then now you're asking us to deal with something that we can't deal with, right? You're asking us to deal with the human condition. And they make white supremacy racism as if it's a natural thing. As if this was inevitable. We were gonna wind up in this situation in the first place. How we are, how we interact, the people who have power and the people who are subject to that power, this was naturally gonna happen. Hey, if it was reversed, y'all would do the same thing to us. No, we wouldn't.
Nah. And that is we wouldn't.
That is understand. Yeah. No, we wouldn't. We would not turn around and subjugate and mistreat white people every single time we came across them throughout the time of millennia of recorded history on this planet. Everywhere white people have gone, everywhere on this planet, when they came in contact with people who were not white, who were not classified as white, who was not them, they never, not one time, brought peace, harmony, or solidarity. Not one time. There's nowhere on this planet where white people have gone and showed up on an expedition or by accident or on purpose, that when they came in contact with those people who were not white like them, it was always conflict right off the rip. And some of us have still been dealing with that initial conflict since then. Not one time. Not one time. Not one time in history and nowhere on this planet. Every single time white Europeans, European imperialism and colonialism, mm-hmm. every time they stepped off that continent and they came to somebody that wasn't them, it was to kill, steal, and destroy.
That sort of correlate with why they just hunt and just like kill stuff for fun. I'm just like, yeah, like.
And I need my guns. That's the man. And I need my guns. And I need my gun because I like to go hunting. Yep. I'm sure you like to go hunting, motherfucker. Yeah, man. And that's the realest speech, man. That's the realest speech, yo. You know?
I enjoy talking to you, man. It's always enlightening. It's always enlightening. Ever since 2012, I think, when you...
We 5 years in the game?
Yeah, man. It's been...
No, I felt like I know you longer, man.
What? Well, was that 2011?
It was 12. Yeah, maybe 12 or 11. Okay, Brucey. All right. Okay. Yeah. All right, maybe so. Yeah, it was 12. It was definitely 12 for sure. Yeah, it was 11, 12. It was when Torn and them.
Yeah.
So it was one. Right. That's good. No, man. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. And this was a great episode, man. This is really good talk, man. I appreciate all of it, man. You helped me out.
Nah, man. I'm just appreciate you just like being able to give me a voice, man. Because I just try to give my perspective of just being a black officer. And just letting people know, man, it's like, I know it's a little crazy right now. And I know the media ain't helping, but there's a lot of good black officers out there and people that's working. There's good white officers too, but white supremacy is real. And just, we got to start teaching ourselves. Like, it sucks that we have to do that, but I was blessed. I had a lot of old heads and I met a lot of men who taught me, like, this is what you need to do in a situation, like, because they have this power, so this is how you need to handle yourself. It doesn't make you a bitch, doesn't make you soft. Ultimately, it's about, you want to get home, right? You want to make a home to your family so you can work on fixing these issues that we're dealing with. But we got to be able, it's like, you got to be able to navigate those waters, man. And that's what I see, just a lot of black people aren't taught that. So they're frustrated and they have every right to be, and they're snapping. And the people in power, the white people in power, they're just doing what they were going to do anyway. They're just waiting.
They were going to do it anyway.
That's a knee jerk reaction. Oh, yeah. You want? Okay, bet. It's basically giving them the leeway to do what they need to do.
They already had it set up before you even showed it. Mm-hmm.
So it's deep, man. It's deep, and just seeing it from my perspective, it's deep, man. That's why. I'm gonna keep grinding and keep fighting for us.
Appreciate that, man. All right.
Yes, sir.
I'll touch base with you.
All right, man.
All right. Brother.